This is a podcast from Minute Media.
The NFL schedule is officially out, so we have 17 games to discuss this week on Pod Like a Raven. All right, so maybe we won't discuss all 17 games this week, but we will absolutely be looking at the entirety of the Ravens' schedule and figuring out how they can have a 17-0 season that leads them to the postseason and the Super Bowl. I'm Antonio Barbera, and we have that and some news to discuss this week on Pod Like a Raven. And starting off with sort of a somewhat sad note, only a two-man booth. This week, no Jace Evans. He had to go off and have a life and have better things to do and travel and go on vacation and all that good stuff. So it's just the two of us. So I'm going to bring in my co-host for the episode, Tim Horsey. Tim, how's it going, man?
Good. I actually just returned from a trip to Boston/New England area to see a buddy of mine. And I'm dedicated to this podcast, so I planned my vacation around Pod Like a Raven rather than, you know, intentionally taking off so he doesn't have to do the show.
The good people appreciate it, Tim. I know that.
And I am a man of the people.
We haven't had an episode in 2 weeks, so it just seems like Jace could have, worked some plans around this. And I say that when I will absolutely be missing, I think, maybe our next episode, because I will have some vacation of my own. But we can address that down the road. For this week, we have obviously the schedule to talk about, the NFL and all the teams' respective social media teams just going above and beyond and maybe going too far with all of their respective overproduced 3 to 4 minute videos of showing each team's schedules. And we're going to break down the Ravens' schedule, figure out where maybe the rough patches are, figure out why the scheduling gods put all their division games late in the season, and sort through the rest of the NFL's schedules as well, find some fun games. But first, we have a couple of news items to touch on relating to the Ravens. And I'm going to start with tight end Nick Boyle. Reworked his contract. He was set to make something like $5 million this season, and they finagled it to where the number is lower, but now he gets the signing bonus and this, that, and the other. The real point of this is two things. Number one, Boyle agreeing to do this basically kept him on the roster, in my opinion, because his cap hit was too high for a guy who has not really been productive for two seasons now. And the second thing is that it gave the Ravens an extra $2.65 million in cap space, which is necessary for these rookie contracts and maybe giving them an opportunity to sign a cheap veteran free agent for some spots that they definitely still need. Tim, Nick Boyle's deal being reworked. First of all, do you agree that this keeps him on the roster, or is it mostly just like you'll make the same amount of money in the long run? We just this be a team player here.
I think it gives him a better chance. Obviously the Ravens drafted two tight ends in the NFL draft, Isaiah Likely and Charlie Kohler. Mark Andrews is there. Nick Boyle, though, brings a different skill set to this team, and we saw how valuable that skill set was when he was on the field two seasons ago as a blocking tight end, as basically an extra tackle. Now, with that, with four tight ends and a guy named Patrick Ricard, who tried to enter the free agent market with kind of trying to get sort of tight end slash fullback slash weapon money, maybe it means that Boyle is the odd man out there. It's going to come down to one of those games. I don't think Boyle really plays special teams, from what I remember. I could be proven wrong on that. And so he might, kind of be the 54th man on a 53-man roster when it finally comes to it, which is sad because I think he brings something really, really important to the Ravens. But these are the decisions, that you have to make. And when you have, again, Patrick Ricard, who a slightly different position, but basically does the same thing Boyle does. And then you had two rookies on, significantly less deals and guys that they drafted literally two tight ends almost back to back. So they figure that at least one of those guys they want to work out, essentially. I think it makes it tough. Yeah, it gives him a chance to stay on the roster. But as many have noted, including Jeff Cerebeck of The Athletic, this just shows that he has to stay healthy. He has to be in camp. He has to show that he's ready to contribute. And if he's not, then yeah, I think it might be. Unfortunately, Nick Boyle's time in Baltimore might be limited.
Yeah, he was sort of like the spoon that stirs the drink when the Ravens' running game was sort of at its peak and their RPO was at its peak in that 14-2 season. So you would, you know, the goal for fans is that he returns to that just blocking ability, that versatility that he showed. The official numbers for those math nerds in the listenership, Boyle's $5 million salary lowered to $1.12 million with a $2.63 million signing bonus plus $1.25 million via incentives. So those numbers, in my quick math, basically total five, but 1.25 of that is now incentive-based, and there's some cap space. So we will see. Another tight end that Tim did not mention is technically on this team is Josh Oliver. And as this room is getting right, tighter and tighter, he's, you know, more than an odd man out. He's like oddest man out, and I don't know how he stays on the team at this point once we get to, I suppose, if there's no injuries over the summer. I don't see a spot for Josh Oliver with those two drafted rookie tight ends. So we'll see. In theory, there's a lot of dudes, so a lot of guys pick the best four, and the tight end room will be another stacked position group again for the Ravens.
I think, another too, deal. Sorry, Antonio, yeah, apologies, sure. I didn't mean to cut in there. I just think, too, it's another emphasis on a point that this offense might be changing a little bit, and let's be honest, it has to change. You know, we talk about Kohler and Isaiah Likely. They're both more receiving tight ends, Likely more of your big play guy. Kohler, the guy out of Iowa State, as Jace mentioned, very much a, you know, third and seven, get eight type of dude that helps move the sticks, big body that Lamar can throw to. Mark Andrews is, you know, the best tight end in the National Football League as of last season, so can pretty much do it all. And maybe they have to move away from just having a dude that's really there for blocking and blocking only. And in a weird way, that's exciting. But, you know, if the offense actually isn't changing and Greg Roman continues to prove that, you know, he doesn't know how to make adjustments, then, you know, it could be really bad news that we don't really think about as the season goes on.
And when your wide receiver room is what it currently is,
yeah,
you can't have all these extra, well, he's a really good blocker dudes. Need some tight ends who can, multiple tight ends who can actually catch passes and run routes and break tackles. So, yeah, we'll see what how that group shakes out. And the other deal that the Ravens did in the past few weeks was sign running back Mike Davis. We all saw this one coming. We all know who Mike Davis is. I say both of those things in jest. Davis has essentially been a reserve running back for 8 years with 5 different teams. Most recently, the Atlanta Falcons, where he played in all 17 games, but only had 500 rushing yards, 3.6 yards per carry. His career average is 3.7 yards per carry. Tim, we've done a little bit of research on this. We've talked about it a little bit pre-show, but I'm going to just ask the question again to pose it for our listeners. What kind of sign, why? What are we doing with this type of guy? Why sign a player like Mike Davis based on his sort of track record and the number of running backs that the Ravens already have?
I am way higher on this than you are. Interesting.
I'm not low on it. I'm just teasing it in terms of let's jump into the discussion here.
Look, best case scenario, he doesn't see the field as much because Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins are ready to come back and they're fully healthy and ready to go. Maybe worst case scenario, he's the Devontae Freeman of this team and carrying the load. And personally for me, a better version of what Devontae Freeman was last season. Because J.K. and Gus aren't quite ready to fulfill their roles yet. I think he provides something a little bit different. It's interesting, you know, Mike Davis looks like a bowling ball as a running back, which then you immediately think between the tackles, 2 yards and a cloud of dust type guy, and his yards per carry average might look like that. But in two seasons, in 2020, when he was basically played, he started 12 games and featured in 15 games because Christian McCaffrey can't stay on the field when he was in Carolina. He ended up had 59 receptions for 373 yards. He was an option out of the backfield for whichever quarterback it was in Carolina in 2020. Maybe Teddy Bridgewater.
Probably more than one or two.
Right, exactly. And then even last year, yeah, Cordarrelle Patterson kind of took over that role, a really good story, kind of turned it into the whatever weapon. Mike Davis, you know, he only started 8 games, but he still had 44 receptions out of the backfield. So I think, again, kind of with the Boyle thing, the Ravens, you know, we joke about like the Ray Rice days when it was check down to Ray Rice, check down to Ray Rice all the time. This is a bit different for them. They did not really throw to their running backs a lot, it seemed like, especially last season, unless it was kind of desperation time. And maybe Mike Davis provides a little bit of an option. And more importantly for me, you know, Tyler Batty, people want to be excited about a 6th-round pick. Who knows? It's a 6th-round pick. This, if your two guys, your J.K. Dobbins and your Gus Edwards, who, let's not kid ourselves here, they need to be healthy for this team to be successful next season. But if they're not, if they're not ready to go week one, and who knows with those ACL injuries, I think it's a pretty reliable backup to, you know, basically run through the AFC East until we get into like week 5, week 6, week 7.
Either the same day or the next day after the Ravens signed Davis, they then withdrew the free agent tender on Tyson Williams, which essentially just makes him a free agent and also shows that the Ravens were not going to sign him, we're not going to keep him. So Tyson Williams, boy, a brief but shining light, in my opinion, for the Ravens. I liked him. He was a guy in that running back room after we lost Edwards and Dobbins who could actually break tackles and run away from people. Got into the Harbaugh doghouse, never really saw the light of day again. And officially now basically gone and will no longer be a Raven. So it's sort of, I mean, you're replacing a guy in Tyson Williams that the coaching staff did not love because he was making essentially mistakes, missing assignments, you know, making mental mistakes. And you replace him in the room with a veteran that in theory does all those things right, or else he would not still be in the NFL as a reserve running back after this many seasons. So in that respect, I like the move. I assume Mike Davis does not play any special teams at this stage of his career, so he will have to, as Tim mentioned, assuming that Dobbins and Edwards are good to go, he will have to wrestle that third back role from Justice Hill, who is another sort of question mark at this point, and Tyler Batty. But we'll see. You know, another veteran, just the most classic of Ravens April, May signings, a 1-year deal. I have not seen the money anywhere, so I don't actually know how much, but I would assume it's more than $1 million and less than $3 million, somewhere like that. And then outside of the Ravens moves, this is sort of a move that happened parallel to the Baltimore Ravens, and this is Jarvis Landry, who was a free agent. A lot of stories, a lot of ideas about him becoming the perfect Raven, instead signing with the New Orleans Saints. Tim added a great tidbit here that I'll give this to the listener. I'm going to give them 5 seconds to guess in their own minds what Jarvis Landry should get on a 1-year deal as a free agent. Think about it. I bet your number was more than $3 million, and that is what Jarvis Landry is getting in a 1-year deal, which then led Baltimore land to scream and kick and shout. If it was only $3 million, why couldn't the Ravens get him? Why wouldn't he play for the Ravens? Tim, are you fine with Jarvis Landry not being a Baltimore Raven at that, considering that price was all it took for him to go elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, 1 year, $3 million, $3 million in incentives. The discourse around the Ravens and the receivers and all this, it's a family show, but I'll just say BS, is part of the reason I hate that the job that, you know, pays me so meagerly forces me to be on social media. I can't stand Ravens Twitter, and I follow a lot of people on it because we do this podcast and I like to try and be in the know. But there's so many people screaming that there's going to be no receivers is the death of this team and they can't have these youthful guys, but then there's other people screaming that, you know, they they can't bring in a ton of veteran presence because you have to believe in these young bucks, when frankly, as most Twitter arguments go, it's somewhere in the middle. They definitely need a veteran presence, I think, but I still believe in the growth of a guy like Devin DuVernay, in the growth of a Rashad Bateman. And then the fact that we just mentioned earlier, there are a million tight ends on this team, and I don't know. The Kohler and Likely picks to me look pretty sensational. I'm very excited to see, and maybe I'd be more excited with a different offensive coordinator. That's two shots already, 15 minutes into this podcast. But maybe I'd be a bit more excited if I had I'm throwing out a name here, but a Sean McVay type of offensive coordinator who just does crazy crap with his personnel sets and things like that. The other thing with Landry too, everybody could scream about the number, right? He's from New Orleans. He went to LSU. He did the whole let's run it back with Honey Badger and go back to where it all started. He did this with OBJ in Cleveland. He wanted to play with his former LSU buddy in Cleveland. We all know how that worked out. And so I don't think the Ravens were ever going to compete. He's 30 years old in this season. Excuse me. I believe it's November. He'll be 30 years old. And you're not going to – for a guy that wants to play in his hometown and all the – and look – you know, hindsight 2020 or whatever, and he can say it now that he signed with New Orleans, but all the PR around this is Jarvis is coming home. Landry's coming home. He's even tweeting, I'm excited to be home. And frankly, remember, he fought with Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters a couple of times via social media and on the field. So maybe he didn't want to play with those dudes in Baltimore. Maybe he just doesn't like them. I don't know. And the other issue I have with this as well, and look, this is for smarter people than I, Jarvis Landry, great player. But if you're trying to get Rashad Bateman to really take over that role, isn't that kind of the same receiver? You know, Landry's not your blow the top off the defense guy, and I almost think that it stagnates a guy like Bateman who, yeah, you're taking a risk betting on him to be wide receiver one, but that's also why you spend a first-round pick on him last year, because you're expecting him to be wide receiver one. That's how these things work. So, you know, you look at some of the guys that are still out there. PFF has a great tracker here of available, you know, position breakdowns. And you look at their top list here. It's the likes of DeSean Jackson, T.Y. Hilton, Emmanuel Sanders, Will Fuller are the four names that I pop out. And then the Antonio Brown, never going to happen. We don't even have to talk about it. And OBJ, never going to happen. Or if it does happen, I don't even know what I'm going to do, because that just seems ridiculous to me. But Emmanuel Sanders, a guy that a bit of a speedster. T.Y. Hilton would be the most stereotypical Raven signing of all time, and a guy who maybe can't blow the top off the defense anymore, but poses a little bit of that deep threat. DeSean Jackson, the same. Will Fuller is the one where if Jarvis Landry getting 1 year, $3 million, you can bring in Will Fuller in August, 1 year, $1.5 million, and it's like, hey, if he can stay healthy for 10 games, 12 games, and that's just a dude that you can throw on the side and say, we're running go routes all the time to open up this offense. I think that I just money wise and fit wise, I think it fits. So the discourse of, do you think the Ravens have to go after it? If they're not, is their season over? Or no, you don't even trust those young guys. Trust the process. It's in the middle. I still think they need to find an option. I just don't think, one, they were ever in the competition for Jarvis Landry, no matter how many people wanted to link the two. And two, I just don't know if he fits. You're looking for cheaper Hollywood at this point, and that's not Landry's game. Now, look, I would have enjoyed him on the team. Like, him and Bateman is a formidable duo with a guy like DuVernay to be, and maybe that's your guy that blows the top off the defense, and then people say, well, then you can have Landry, Bateman, and DuVernay as your deep threat, whatever. When I look at that number, I just go, well, he was going to go to New Orleans. If New Orleans was interested, he was going there, and there was no reason for Ravens fans to get upset about it, but they're one of the most, for whatever reason, spoiled fan bases in the National Football League, or maybe we just have to deal with it. So everybody, you know, blew their lid over something that I just didn't think was ever going to happen.
I agree with all this. Maybe more well, that's than boring. Anything, that T.Y. Hilton is the most
that's happening,
likely Ravens signing of all time.
I mean, he said on the Pat McAfee show, sorry not to cut in, he said on the Pat McAfee show last offseason that Baltimore offered him more money, and he was like, I want to go back to the Colts. The Colts don't want him again. maybe DaCosta just says, hey, buddy, we're not going to offer that deal we had you last year, but there's a spot.
The issue, okay, the one thing I'll disagree, not the one thing, but the thing I'll disagree with is that as a guy who wants good football teams and good football players, T.Y. Hilton is Sammy Watkins. Jarvis Landry is like a cut above that. And if the price was $3 million, then it wasn't a guy that was super out of reach. This is a five-time Pro Bowl player who was hurt a little bit last season. He played in 12 games, but is not like a washed receiver, where I think we kind of thought Sammy Watkins was at that point, and the Ravens have done that so many times. And the Jarvis Landry, in my opinion, would have been the, like, 2 years before that level of receiver. You still would have had a season or two of him at near prime football playing, and the Ravens room right now needs better than T.Y. Hilton. If Rashad Bateman, who I believe is wide receiver one, made catches last year, like I agree with what you were saying in terms of what type of receiver he is, but you know, the third and seven guy, but also had some deep catches and had some, you know, super like out jump somebody for the ball on a deep route. But if he's hurt, if he tweaks a hamstring and misses two games,
right,
it's a JV team at that point. There is zero depth at this position, and he is a guy who in his rookie season was already hurt and had to have a surgery and missed whatever it was the first six games of the season. If he has anything, then this room becomes Devin Duvernay, James Prochet, Tylan Wallace, who I think the three of them this past season had like 30 catches combined, yep. Maybe. That's bad. that's a problem. So they will get somebody. They will add one of these type dudes later in the summer. But I want them to get half, not Devontae Adams, a half step up guy, because we've already seen so many times these 32-year-old plus wide receivers who just don't really have anything left. And I think Jarvis Landry was that half step before that, where you were still going to get like 60 catches from him, even in a wide receiver two role.
Yeah, it's fair. And I don't disagree with that. And I think it would be much better for them to do the Anquan Boldin, trade a couple draft picks next year. Right. And they've been trying to get that ever since. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. Steve Smith, we love him here, but he wasn't a success. They didn't win anything with Steve Smith. He was fine, and that was the closest thing they had to Boldin since Boldin, and that's what you maybe look for. I'm trying to think, you know, the Reddit I bored on my phone and can't fall asleep one is Tyler Lockett, because people think that, you know, Seattle is trying to rebuild, DK is never going to happen, so maybe Tyler Lockett. Seattle, by all accounts, doesn't think they're rebuilding. They think Drew Lock is the guy, whatever. So maybe it's not him, but a guy like that where they can go, look, we'll sacrifice one of our precious third round picks and a fifth and, you know, maybe a player or something and upgrade. And the depth thing, I think you nail. Like, this is assuming everyone's healthy. Did you just watch last season? Not everybody's going to be healthy. And the wide receiver room, any one of those dudes goes down as currently constructed, there's a problem. The only thing we don't have to go back and forth. I push back on, and this is pure speculation, I push back on the price. I think that's a New Orleans price. That ain't a Baltimore price. I don't think the Ravens are getting Jarvis Landry for 1 year, $3 million with $3 million in incentives. I think it had to be more than that, and they weren't willing. You know, they either didn't like the fit or they weren't willing to pay it.
Devin Duvernay last season, 33 catches. I am actually pleasantly surprised by that number. James Prochet, boy, looks so good in camp.
Don't even.
16 catches. Tylan Wallace, 2 catches. Time to step up, guys. Let's see Prochet. Let's see that jugs machine out early at 5 a.m. this summer, because we're going to need more production from you. And now basically we're going to have the same exact conversation, Tim, but instead of wide receiver, the position group is now edge rusher, because also in the last few days, the Dolphins signed Melvin Ingram to a 1 year, $5 million contract. Ingram started the season with the Steelers, ended the season with the Chiefs, and did not have huge sack numbers, but was absolutely disruptive and was turning heads during the Chiefs' postseason run. Still looked like a guy with a lot of juice. just in terms of like getting to the quarterback, but maybe not having a sack, which thank goodness Jace isn't here because he likes his quarterbacks on the ground. He likes official sacks, not just QB hits.
I mean, Melvin Gordon, too, by the way.
Yeah, but Melvin Ingram, now off the market with the Dolphins. So we turn now to Edge, Tim, where it's essentially the same exact conversation. He would have been a nice pick, a nice type of player for the Ravens, getting that veteran. Do you think they still need an edge? Justin Houston, they have, what is it, like a tender on him? So like that, yeah. Other teams have to outbid that number, essentially, to steal him away. Do you know how that works?
Yeah, so actually I just pulled it up here because what happened is with Justin Houston, 2 weeks ago they used the UFA unrestricted free agent tender on him. And so this is just coming from the ESPN article on this, which, by the way, the Chiefs did this with Melvin Ingram. So essentially what happens is if another team signs the player, Justin Houston, it's not exclusive rights, but if they sign the player before July 22nd or the first day of training camp, whichever is later, the former team, you know, being the Ravens or the Chiefs with Melvin Ingram, obviously, that counts towards their compensatory formula. And guess what the Ravens love? Compensatory picks in the national in the NFL draft. That's why they use this. Now, if Justin Houston is not signed before whichever one of these dates occurs last, then the Ravens do get exclusive rights, quote, negotiating rights to the respective player at 110% of their 2021 salary. So just above what they were making the previous year. For Houston, it was $1.18 million. So he's 33 years old right now, 4.5 sacks. Look, for the edge conversation, yes, I absolutely think they need an edge. I think Dalen Hayes showed promise, injury. Tyus Bowser is what he is, injury. Adafe Owe, progressing in year two, but...
Ten sacks this year.
Right, yeah, we'll see. Progressing, but not. I'm not ready to make him the number one pass rusher, and also off-season surgery. So there's a hole there. And for me personally, and look, you could just say, well, all you care about is offensive and defensive line, and you care way more about defense than you do offense. And you know what? You're right. But I think edge rusher for me is a bigger need based on who is there and who is healthy, frankly. And I don't know. Maybe they're waiting for a Justin Houston deal, and then they have other irons in the fire. Or They're playing the long game here, and if nobody signs Houston, they're more than willing to bring him back as a, you know, spot rotational role in this defense. But yeah, I think it's absolutely essential for them to grab somebody. Some other names that come out: Anthony Barr, the outside linebacker for the Minnesota Vikings for a while. I'm not sure if he's played with anybody else. Justin Pierre-Paul, who, you know, wasn't the force that he used to be with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but he's still out there on the market. And Antonio's favorite, Jadeveon Clowney, is still out there, still probably going to command a fee that he is not worth because he's one of the most overrated players in National Football League history based on, you know.
Would have led the Ravens in sacks and QB hits last season.
Don't disagree with that. 100%. But for whatever reason, because Clowney, you know, the high school number one recruit, the incredible hit in that bowl game and number one overall pick, what have you, is continually demanding a price that I don't know if the Ravens are willing to match. But hey, maybe that changes this year.
Yeah. Oh boy. If the wide receiver issue is significant, the edge rusher issue is maybe even worse. I don't know if they're going to have a week one starting edge rusher at all with the current group of players they have, because of Tyus Bowser, we don't, you know, that the timetable for any tear is always, you know, could be longer than anticipated. Odafe Owe, as Tim mentioned, is like a developing player. He will start. Is he a guaranteed starter on a team that has really good edge rushers? I guess, maybe. It's the second most important position in the National Football League, after quarterback. Maybe left tackle, but I don't think so. I think it's having a good quarterback and then having players who can go get the other team's very good quarterback. And the Ravens have not made significant strides with this since the departure of Terrell Suggs, and I don't like it, and I want a stud at that position. Yeah. I get it. Odafe Owe is a first-round pick. He's supposed to be that. We need more. I think they need two veterans at this point, based on what the room is right now. Jalen Ferguson has not done anything. No. We're in year four of waiting for Jalen Ferguson to have more than two sacks in a season. Like,
remember Sack Daddy?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. David Ajabo. Like, I'm looking at the Our Lads depth chart, right, who does a really good job with the depth charts, a useful resource for guys like us. But you look at the Rush and the Sam, you know, the outside linebackers, essentially. Starters are Adafe Owe and Tyus Bowser. The backups, second string is David Ajabo. He is not going to play this season, most likely. They said he's recovering really quickly. I don't think so. Like, maybe late in the year as a very rotational piece. Then you have Sack Daddy.
And he's not going to be good. Yeah, like, right. He's not going to be in the best shape. He's not going to have the football knowledge. He's going to be like a week one rookie, basically, 100%. In January.
100%. Then you have Jalen Ferguson. You have Dalen Hayes, who I mentioned, who looked good in preseason, but he's coming off a torn ACL. Who knows what the deal is there? And then a guy named Chuck Wiley, who, sure. I've never heard of Chuck Wiley. Where's 53, though? Good number, especially in the Ravens font. But, I think I'm with you. I think if we put a poll up amongst Ravens fans, based on Twitter and based on people just wanting the sexy pick, I think a lot of people would say wide receiver. But the people in the know, like the Pod Like a Raven host, would say that edge rusher is huge because you have to get to the quarterback. I don't care how many dudes you have in your secondary. You look at the secondary, it's stacked, and rightfully so. But at the same time, any receiver is going to be open if the quarterback can sit there for 7 seconds. I don't care how good Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Williams, Kyle Hamilton, Marcus Peters, all of them are. They're going to struggle if nobody can get to the quarterback and force the guy off his spot.
Just imagine the frustration, Tim, watching those games.
No,
third downs.
No.
And you just hear, oh, he's got loads of time back there. And a 7-second count ends up being enough time to get away from Marlon Humphrey, which it is enough time. Yeah. So, yeah, if on a scale of 1 to 5, the urgency level, I'd put wide receiver at like 4 and I'd put edge at like 7. So that's where we're at in my head for these two position groups. But it is the Ravens, and they tend to figure this stuff out, especially over the summer, so they will get some kind of veteran dudes to fill the room.
And we'll convince ourselves that they're the answer.
And just ask them to hold on until the second half when Tyus Bowser will be healthy and Adafe Owe will have had, you know, the full rookie amount of starts under his belt, and Ojabo will come out of the tunnel with excitement. Anyway, I got to calm down. I'm getting heated. Tim, we're in May, and I'm getting heated over personnel moves that the Ravens are making. So with that, we're going to do the random Raven, and then turn to the schedule release. It's just two of us, and I'm up this week with the random Raven, so the pressure is on Tim. But I have good news for you, Tim. I did not pick, in my mind, I didn't like go deep, deep, deep down the depth chart.
Appreciate
and
that.
I also did not take us to the 90s, did not even take us to the early 2000s. I took us to... not long ago, I took us to the post-Super Bowl Joe Flacco era.
Okay.
And yes,
the Dark Ages,
which
then.
Some would say the Dark Ages. But I did specifically go to 2014, which was, looking back, as we get, you know, what that's 8 years ago, has become one of my favorite, not one of my favorite, but a long-lost Raven team. Because they went to the postseason, they won a playoff game, they should have won in New England. That 2014 team had sauce. And I'm devastated. We'll forever be devastated that they couldn't take care of the Pats with two touchdown leads in the postseason. But I digress, Tim.
God.
This random Raven played for the team for 2 seasons, 2014 and 2015, after being drafted in the 3rd round, pick number 79, out of Florida State. Big expectations for this player were not met. I was going to say, I think I could stop right there, but we'll continue.
I got it.
Big expectations were not met when he struggled as a backup in his rookie season, which was cut short after 11 games when he tore his ACL. In his second year, his snap count went down dramatically from 245 in his rookie year to 67 in his second year, and he only played in 12 games and recorded only 9 tackles. By the start of his third season, he was in a competition to stay on the roster after the team signed Eric Weddle and planned to move Lardarius Webb from corner to safety. And this random Raven ended up getting released just before the start of the 2016 season. After what seemed like a complete bust of a draft pick, he was then signed by the Eagles the next day and played another six seasons in the NFL with the Eagles, Jets, Patriots, and Texans, and was recently re-signed by the Texans this offseason and will again be an NFL football player in the year 2022. This player has only had six starts in an eight-year career and will make about $12 million after the conclusion of the 2022 season. Tim, a deep sigh. Tim, do you know who this is? He is an active football player, recently re-signed with the Texans, and will play for them in 2022.
Oh my!
I was shocked
God.
We had not done this player before.
So I'm stunned because I have circled this guy about 12 times of like, this is a guy that I could do. And yeah, third round out of Florida State, I immediately went, I thought that guy was going to be a superstar for the Ravens, or at least, yeah. I don't know, competent, and he was not. Yeah, wow. Another safety of the future after Ed Reed, who ended up not working out. Yeah, all right. Well, we'll give the listener some time to think about it. But, yeah, that is that's upsetting.
I read in researching this random Raven that at the start of that third season, when the story was Lardarius Webb is moving to safety, or, you know, we're trying to move him to safety, it was like, well, he's going to get hurt. Webb is going to get hurt, so this player will have a lot of opportunities still. Instead, the player, said player, was released, and Lardarius Webb ended up playing and starting 16 out of 16 games in 2016, and then played another 16 games in 2017, and became a beloved Raven. I wonder if Lardarius Webb will squeeze into the Ravens Ring of Honor because of just he was like a beloved Raven, only played for them for his full career, did a lot of super like charitable stuff in the community, so we'll see. But anyway, this random Raven did not unseat Lardarius Webb at the safety position, and we will go over that at the end of the episode. So let's turn now to the schedule released for all teams in the NFL, but we are going to focus specifically at this point on the Ravens' schedule. Tim, I'm going to break this into stretches of games, basically. I might do it four game at a time, four games here, five games here. So, and then at the end, do a little over-under analysis on what the line currently is and what we think you should be doing as a potential NFL sports gambler. But let's start with the start of this Ravens season, and it's at the Jets, home to the Dolphins, at the Pats, home against the Bills. Yes, if that sounds odd, it is odd, because it's four straight games against the AFC East. Tim, what? What is this? Why are we doing this? And what's the confidence level with this stretch of first four games?
Yeah, I mean, the way this schedule breaks out is so weird to me. And we'll go through the later quadrants, but obviously this kind of pushes the division games down, which I don't love. You know, we get the Tom Brady cakewalk, basically, where we get to beat up on some of the AFC East teams, although the Bills are, like, the best team in the National Football League now, so maybe it's not the same thing. I don't love it, again, only because I like having some of these – look, and it's hard to say, and we're going to get into some buy or sell. Antonio has a really cool segment coming up later of certain things when looking at a schedule, you know, in May compared to September, October, November, and so on. I think it's really weird, and I don't like it. I don't love the Pats and Bills back-to-back. I like starting with the Jets. I do enjoy starting with the Jets.
A lot of chatter coming out of New York, Tim, about the confidence going into week one.
Good.
A lot of chatter.
Good, because they're going to face a pissed-off Ravens team. And by the way, this is when I mentioned that Mike Davis was going to roll through the AFC East, because we just played the AFC East to start the year. I don't know if I – and again, I'm not like – breaking down other people's schedules or other teams' schedules constantly. I don't know if I've ever seen this or it's ever been brought up where it's just your all your outside division games are all just packed into the beginning of the season. But I don't know how to break it down in terms of the first 4 weeks, but what I will say is what it does to the rest of the schedule, I don't necessarily love.
I would agree. But I think it's a 3-1 start, and that's what I like.
Oh, I
like
so
coming
confident.
Out of the gates. I mean, Jets, Dolphins, Pats. Tim, I'm into it. I'm into that 3-0 start, and then the Bills is going to be that game that the Ravens lose by 40. We've seen that so many times in Ravens cycles. That's the home game that they get absolutely smashed, and all expectations come back down to earth. But
yeah,
the other three games I kind of like, and we've talked about it in our first few segments. This is a season where, in theory, the Ravens should get healthier as the season goes along, and the depth should improve as the season goes along. So push those AFC North games to later in the schedule. But yeah, I'm okay with the first four. I tell you what I'm not okay with is October. And that's going to bake in this Bills game and then an additional four games. October is the tough stretch. And this is what we talked about last season. I want to say that that stretch was in December, where it was like Steelers twice, Packers were in there, and another really tough game that I can't, maybe the Rams, I don't remember, there was another game that was really hard in a five-game stretch. And here it is this year. It is going to be Bills, Bengals on, what is that, Sunday night, at the Giants, home against the Browns, and then at the Bucks. That's a difficult stretch of five games. There are two of those on the road. The easiest one of those five, the Giants in theory, is one of those road games, which is going to make it more tough. Tim, would you rather have this stretch in October than in December? Do you feel any bit better that even if they have losses here, they have enough time to like right the ship and win some games late to get a postseason berth? Or are we just going to be sad and devastated when at the end of October the team has a losing record?
I mean, for my own personal well-being, I'm glad that it's in October because it's just not as stressful. I don't know. I don't think you added the at Saints as well right before the bye week.
The first week in November.
First week in November. And so the Buccaneers is a two away games against the two hardest teams in the NFC South. Thanks for that. Both in prime time, by the way, which is just my favorite thing, and we'll talk about that later. At Bucks on Thursday night. Tom Brady gets to just devour us again while the entire world is watching. And then at Saints on Monday night in one of the best atmospheres in the country, especially on primetime. Those guys get to drink on Bourbon Street all day and then go into the Superdome. Not great! And I think that the Saints are actually a pretty good team if they can figure out the quarterback issue, which, you know, obviously is a massive thing. But outside of that, I think that roster is loaded. And even with Sean Payton being gone, Dennis Allen being in that system for them, I think makes them a contender light, we'll put it. So, yeah, Bills, Bengals, Giants, Browns, Bucks, Saints is horrific. I would argue it is not the hardest stretch, and we'll talk about that in a little bit later. Maybe just on paper, yes, but I think the hardest stretch is later in the year when you have to play all your division games right at the end. Even if it's, you know, Kenny Pickett twice and whoever, you know, or the Bengals have the Super Bowl curse or what have you. We'll get to them at Bengals at the end of the year. What the hell?
It's not fair.
Again,
it's not right.
Again, it's just absolutely, like, I think the Ravens for the next 35 years shouldn't have to play the Bengals on the final day of the season, which it just drives me crazy. But the only other point I have on this stretch, too, is you notice the Browns game is week 7, right? And as of time of recording, it sounds like we're going to get some Deshaun Watson news later this week. He's going to be suspended for 6 games and then come back in week 7. That is 100% what's going to happen. As soon as I saw the schedule, I just went, yep, Rodgers here to us, and we're going to get Deshaun Watson's first game with the Browns in week 7, and it's just going to be miserable for everybody involved.
Right. Couldn't have had a Browns game in the first 4 weeks.
Week 2, you know?
Yeah, no, we're too busy just traveling up and down 95 and playing the AFC North corridor teams.
Horrendous.
And then you mentioned that Bucks Saints stretch. The week after that is Panthers. So then it's 3 games straight against the NFC South.
Well, there is a bye. No, there's a bye in between there as well.
With a bye, but it's just the same, again, one division with 3 games in a row. There's no balance to the schedule at all. And I don't like it. I'm going to convince myself, obviously, later in the summer that I love it. After the Panthers game at Jags, home against the Broncos, at the Steelers, at the Browns, home to the Falcons, home to the Steelers, at the Bengals. So, yes, that's 1-2. Four of the last five games against the AFC North. Two of the Steelers, one Browns game, one Bengals game. I don't know what to make of it. I'm not afraid of Kenny Pickett. I think we're at another era of Pittsburgh Steelers sort of rivalry with this team. I'm going to have to see it to believe it. But, of course, again, he'll have all season to get that rookie, you know, whatever, experience, first-year experience under his belt, and then he'll be ready to go by our two games late in the season. But it's a difficult schedule, I would say. Where do we have that bye, Tim?
So the bye is November. The bye is week 10, November 13th, followed by that Panthers game, as you mentioned, which I'll set the line right now. Ravens by 14.5 against the Carolina Panthers in that one. That's like the most confident I've been. But you talk about this back stretch.
And they don't I was going to say they don't cover that. That's got trap game written all over, Tim. That's a 6-point win.
They win, but they win by 6 and everybody's panicking cuz, you know, the backup left guard or somebody got hurt. The end of this stretch is so interesting. You know, the Panthers at Jags have to be two wins. The Broncos game is so annoying because it was the, oh, yeah, we get to play Drew Lock and now Russell Wilson's here. And look, if you listen to this podcast, I feel like every time we do preseason predictions, I'm all over the Broncos and be like, whoever they have as quarterback will just be enough because they're talented all across the board. And it ends up not working out. I think they finally solved that issue by basically telling John Elway he can't pick the quarterback anymore. So they went with a short king, and now they have Russell Wilson there. And then the final five. You mentioned it. It's at Steelers, at Browns, Falcons, Steelers, at Bengals. Three division games on the road, head-to-head matchups in one of the toughest divisions in football, in games that will be two-point swings, essentially, if you're talking about like soccer terms or what have you. The Falcons, you should beat the brakes off the Falcons. They're easily one of the worst teams in the league. And even, every year there are teams that surprise you, and that's why we love the National Football League. The Falcons aren't going to surprise anybody. They're one of the worst rosters in football right now, and I don't think that they're going to, especially at home, I think that's an easy win, whoever's playing quarterback for them. But I hate having two Steelers games and three road division games to end the year. It makes no sense how unbalanced this schedule is. I'm not, you know, obviously not crying conspiracy or what have you. It just sucks. And I don't know. I don't know. You talked about the Ravens getting healthy again. I could easily see it being the other way, where the Ravens are a bit banged up towards the end of the year. And like we mentioned before, instead of playing the Case Keenum Browns, I don't know if he's still on the roster, because it certainly ain't going to be Baker.
The Baker Mayfield Browns?
Ain't gonna be, no, I don't think that's going to happen. They get to play the Deshaun Watson Browns twice. They get to play the Steelers later, as the Steelers have figured stuff out, rather than the Steelers early when they've got Mitchell playing quarterback, or, you know, early Kenny Pickett, who's still going through everything. I don't necessarily – I have to see it with Pickett too, but this gives him longer and a better chance to figure it out before he plays Baltimore, which is just incredibly annoying. And then the Bengals, who knows? Like, you know, the Super Bowl curse for the loser is a very real thing. I'm sorry. It just statistically is. But then you look at the Bengals roster and they're loaded. So maybe they can – and Joe Burrow is a consummate winner. And having to play them when the team is, what, 9-7 – and they need 10 wins to get to the playoffs, and you have to go to Cincinnati, who might be struggling a little bit because they are feeling the effects of the curse, but they could win. If they win, then some other things happen. Maybe they could get into the playoffs too. That game probably gets flexed into like an incredibly important time slot, late 4:25 rather than our sweet, sweet 1 o'clock, and the team goes out. I hate it. I hate all of it. I usually talk myself into, as Antonio immediately texted us when we got the schedule, 12-5. Spoiler alert, and we can get into this now, I'm feeling less optimistic because of the way the schedule plays out.
It's rough to already know that your season is going to be based off of three or four two-point conversion attempts in December.
Oh, God.
Because
don't
that's even what it looks like with this, because those AFC North games are all going to be close, and the Ravens are going to go for two, and it's just – The 17-game season doesn't really matter. It looks like the Ravens will somewhat be in contention. They'll have AFC North games, and then they're going to have to convert those two-point conversions to win games or tie games or make it a 4-5-point lead instead of a 3-point lead or something stupid like that. So, you know, Lamar, get in the lab, get those two-point plays really well managed, because there's going to be some coming in December and January that are going to make or break this team's playoff aspirations. However, Tim did foreshadow this nicely. The Ravens over-under for wins at this point in time is 9.5. We play 17 games, Tim. That means they got to go 10-7 to go over this number. 9-8, obviously, or anything below that, they would not cover this number. You said it, and I'm going to stand by it. I like 12-5. I'm an optimistic guy. This is obviously, as it should be for just about every NFL team, I am making predictions based on my quarterback playing every game. If he plays 17 games, this team will go over. They will go over 9.5. I have them at 12-5 with losses to the Bills, the Bengals, the Bucks, one of the Steelers games, and then some dumb fifth game.
No Browns. No Browns.
Maybe the. I'm not afraid of the Browns, because I think that they are cursed, Tim, and they deserve it. And I think they're going to have a bad season. They're going to think that Deshaun Watson, who, by the way, hasn't played football in like 2.5 years, is just going to step in and be amazing. They've leveraged their entire future. They don't have picks. He's going to get suspended for a large chunk of games to start the season. I think they're going to start bad and never really recover. So, no, I got the Browns. I'm fading them hard this season, and they deserve it for karmic purposes. And then they're not going to have picks for the next few years, and we're going to love it. So, no, I'm not too concerned about the Browns. It's those four losses that I mentioned, and then a fifth game that just ends up being annoying, like at Jags or at Saints or something like that, that is just stressful. But I'm taking over comfortably 9.5 based on the team that they currently have and based on having a healthy Lamar Jackson week one. But your thoughts, Tim, on 9.5 wins?
I think 9.5 is – this is why Vegas wins all the time. I think 9.5 is right on the money for what this season is going to be. And I'm going to go under. And when I say under, I think 9-8, and it might not be enough to make the playoffs. And look, this is just me reacting in the moment now. Wait till we get to August, and I'm like, 17-0! This team looks awesome! Ronnie Stanley's fully back. Tyus Bowser's great. David Ojabo actually is going to play in October, like they've said. Adafe Owe never had a better training camp. Best shape of his life. Rashad Bateman, the new number 7, looks sweet in the preseason, and I'm all in, but for now, I'm going to go very, very slight under. I think 9-8, 10-7 is right where this team is, especially with injuries. And we don't have to go too long on this. I think a lot of people are just assuming everyone's going to come back healthy, and that's simply not what's going to happen. And so it's not going to be Ravens reloaded, at least to start the year. And I think that might be a bigger concern than a lot of people. A lot of people are saying right now at the moment.
There are like premium odds for guessing the exact record. And so listeners agreeing with Tim's points, looking at a 9-8, like the odds of the Ravens finishing exactly 9-8.
I think it's one of those
10-7.
I think it's one of those two.
They're probably pretty good numbers. Yeah, so that would be something to look at as well. As we know, the NFL is competitive. All the good players were the AFC. And the AFC North is very difficult. So withstanding all of that and having a 9-8 or 10-7 season might be an interesting odds to look at. But all right, we will have plenty of time to talk more about that in the offseason. So let's turn to the NFL schedule. We don't have a ton to talk about here, but I'm going to go through some fun matchups, specifically early in the season fun matchups. Obviously, those are maybe a bit easier to predict as good matchups as opposed to two teams playing each other in week 14, because that may no longer be a good matchup. But at this point, a couple of week one games. Buffalo will travel to the LA Rams as the Rams defend their title at home the first week of the season. Denver and Russell Wilson will travel to Seattle on Sunday Night Football in week one. This is why the Ravens' schedule is so messed up, Tim, because the NFL is so concerned with setting up like perfect matchups to start the season to get all these ideal ratings, that then the Ravens have to do these bonkers schedule balances through 17 games. Anyway, in week three, the Packers will go to Tampa Bay. You got the two Hall of Fame quarterbacks going at it in week three. This will be yet another year of like, oh, we may never see these guys again. But we've been saying that for like 5 years, so who knows. Week four, it's Mahomes and the Chiefs going to Tampa Bay. That's another matchup. That's the future Hall of Famer against the current Hall of Famer. Week eight, Packers go to Buffalo. I kind of think that's like going to be an awesome game. I'm going to enjoy that quarterback matchup. Cowboys travel to Green Bay week 10. I forgot this. That's like Mike McCarthy goes home kind of a situation. So he'll mess something up in Green Bay with 2 minutes left, and the Packers will win that game. Tampa Bay will travel to San Francisco. This is just the Tom Brady like revenge game. Has always been a 49ers fan. A lot of reports that he wanted to go to San Francisco this year as like the sort of dream homecoming last ride, and the didn't really work out, and 49ers kind of said no thanks. So he'll go into that game and throw to 4 to 5 touchdown passes. And then Buffalo travels to Cincinnati in week 17. That could be another, in theory, fun game with a lot of playoff implications. Or it could be a stinker by week 17. And then I just wrote down every AFC West game, because odds are those are going to be awesome matchups with good quarterbacks. Tim, I ran through a lot of games here, but what are some of your favorites? What are ones that you have circled? Obviously outside of the Ravens 17 games, but what are some of these quarterback matchups you enjoy? What do you like
here? Yeah, a couple things. First of all, I mean, you mentioned it, every AFC West game, and early better, because by the end of the year, who the hell knows? It's really hard to tell, and that's why, look, content is king, and you have to write these top 10 lists and what have you, but a lot of these, I'm like, let's see what happens when the games start, because it could be like Jets, I don't know, Falcons is really good late in the year or whatever it is. It won't be, but it could be. Based on your list here, a couple that you didn't mention, AFC West, it is Raiders Chargers again, which is the week 18 from last year that got the Raiders into the playoffs. Interesting rematch there with all, you know, how all those teams reloaded. Week six, if I'm looking at your list, it doesn't look like you have it. Bills at Chiefs, which produced one of the best playoff games of all time. I think that will be an awesome matchup, and it's early enough to know. And then speaking of that, Chiefs team as well, and this is a little bit later down the road, but week 12, Rams at Chiefs. If you don't remember a couple years ago, that like almost perfect, if you like offense, so maybe not for me, NFL Monday night game where it was like 56 to 49 or something. This team's two really good colors too. You know, they're going to be doing like the color rush, yellow versus the red, or like a blue versus the red, what have you. I think it will look really nice. And both teams, you know, you expect to be very good offensively. So Rams Chiefs should be fun as well.
All right. Last segment that we're going to do here. Tim teased it a few minutes ago, and it's a buy or sell. We're doing like the 30-minute ESPN sports talk show because, you know, it's May and NFL games don't happen for another 4 months. But we're doing buy or sell. And what I thought of for this was, as soon as the schedule comes out, there's this immediate just dump of information and stats about all these nebulous advantages that there's no actual statistical evidence to back up whether it leads to success or not. And in fact, it doesn't really just mean that a team will have success because of this factor. And a factor that I'm talking about, for example, is the strength of schedule based on the team's records from the year before. Every year that comes out, ooh, who has the hardest strength of schedule? But it's based off of information from the year before. And those teams have different quarterbacks, they have different draft picks, different coaches. So it ends up not really lending itself as that good of a data point for future success. Travel miles during the season, that maybe was a bigger thing when the players flew commercial and didn't stay in 5-star luxury hotels everywhere they went. The next that stat that comes out is, well, which team will travel the least over the season? Because that's going to mean they're going to be better rested. Where does the bye fall? Is a primetime game good or bad? So I listed a couple of these. We're going to go through them. And, I mean, I'll offer my opinion, but really it's me tossing them to Tim. And we're going to see if Tim buys or sells this as a legitimate thing in the NFL as the schedule comes out. So let's start first. Strength of schedule, Tim. Do you buy or sell the importance of a team's strength of schedule heading into 2022?
Out of everything that you have on this list, I couldn't sell this one harder. I think it just doesn't matter. Parity is king in the NFL. That's why it makes so much money. You have the likes of the New England Patriots dynasties, and you have teams that are well-run and consistently good. But the fact of the matter is, one of these teams is always way better than you thought, and one of them is always way worse. And most of them are a little bit better or worse than you thought going into the season. So selling, sell. Couldn't sell harder.
I probably should have pulled this up to start, but I will. Now that you've sold it, I'll pull up the 2022 strength of schedule rankings. And the Ravens fall. So this is in reverse order, basically. So they're 23rd out of 32 teams in terms of number one being the hardest strength of schedule. So they're like somewhat in the positive, in theory, for strength of schedule, but I still agree with Tim.
Russell Wilson did not play for the Broncos last year. Like,
of course.
That's already a change.
Yeah. The LA Rams, fittingly, have the toughest strength of schedule, based on records from last year. The next one, Tim, in the list here, travel miles during the season. This is one that got Raven attention because they have like the third or fourth fewest miles traveled this season. That's because they play all those games against the AFC East. And then they have games like road games are against Tampa, which is close, as opposed to a West Coast team. And then New Orleans, again, as opposed to like a Midwest team or something like that. So for the Ravens and for all the other NFL teams, Tim, how relevant are travel miles during the season?
I'm selling this, but only slightly. I think you might be selling it a little bit more than I am. I think a team, there are certain factors in the travel that could affect a team. Whether it's an East Coast team, two West Coast games back-to-back, what do you do? Do you go back home? Do you, and then go back and then fly back out a couple days later? Do you stay out on the West Coast? How does that affect the team going forward? I think those are real things. Every player and coach will say it's not. I think it is. And then it's been disproven by some of the analytics and stats guys, but I think there's something to be said for West Coast team going east and having to play a 1 o'clock game. It's a body clock thing. It really is. And these are professional athletes. They have all the tools and resources in the world to make sure that they're ready to play at peak performance for a whatever game. But, yeah, I think there are particular aspects of this that I might buy, but as a whole, travel miles during the season, I'm selling. That being said, ecstatic that the Ravens aren't going very far. I think that's awesome. I think that is a tiny little advantage in the bullcrap of this schedule that we have.
Yeah, I'm selling this as well. I just feel like we've had so many game previews where we talked about like an AFC West team had to fly to Baltimore for a 1 o'clock game, and therefore we had an advantage, and then we looked more asleep at the wheel than that West team did. And I say that, and yet then I watched the Chargers last year against the Ravens, and they were asleep against the Ravens, and they were a much better team than the Ravens, probably, at least offensively, and they struggled mightily in that game and looked off. So, you know, it seems to be, you can look at one game and then you look at another game and it's completely the opposite. And just because there doesn't seem to be consistency with it one way or the other, I sell travel miles. They fly in private planes. They have those nice seats that recline all the way flat, and then they go stay at a bed that is nicer than any bed I will ever sleep in. So I sell travel miles. But we'll see. Next up, the timing of the bye, Tim. I do not have it up in front of me, but I will try to as you're given your piece. But I think byes happen by like week four this season.
It's different,
and it's a 17 game season. I would not love a bye, I think, in week four when there's an extra the 17th game and it's a slog. So I turn to you now. Do you buy or sell the importance of a bye being mid to late season as opposed to maybe in those first few weeks, or even it might be a negative, you know, if you don't have it until like week 12 or whatever it is, like the having the bye right in the middle of the season?
I 100% buy this. I buy having a later bye week as a competitive team looking to get every advantage to stay just a bit healthier for the stretch run. You know, momentum is king in the National Football League. Getting hot at the right time is king in the National Football League, especially in the playoffs. We've seen it over and over and over again with teams who may not be the best team, but they're the hottest team, and they end up making a run, whether it's all the way or to win a Super Bowl. You know, there is the exception that proves the rule, where maybe an early bye week helps a particular team who had some early injuries and or a bad start, and then they get a chance to reset and figure it out and then go nuclear the rest of the season. But I think that is, you know, rarer than having a week 11 like we do, bye week, and being able to recuperate just a little bit with some of the niggling injuries to make a good stretch run. So I'm buying the importance of the bye. Buying the bye is what I'm doing.
So I did find it. Bye weeks start week 6 this year. I think they did used to start.
It was like week four. Yeah.
It was something crazy early that Harbaugh would end up ranting about whenever he had the opportunity. So I feel a little bit better about it starting week 6, but they also continue until week 14. So I would be very annoyed if I were a team that didn't have a bye until or after playing 13 games. I'm going to buy this. I'm going to like weekly buy it, kind of how Tim weekly sold the previous factoid. I'm going to weekly buy this. I just think there's too many examples of like Super Bowl winning teams that had a bad bye week. So I think it is important, but I don't think it ends up being like a super determining factor. And then the most fun one, I think, because it depends who you ask. Primetime games are actually bad for your team because of national spotlight and inevitably shorter weeks, where because the primetime game might be on a Monday, might be on a Thursday, or even on a Sunday night, you know, so it's like 8 hours after your normal 1 p.m. game. So, Tim, are you buying or selling the importance that primetime games actually suck for your team and that you want as few of them as possible?
So, Antonio knows the answer, but if maybe you're a new listener, buy! Buy, 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 and buy again. I hate primetime games. I hate primetime games with the new athlete that loves being all over social media and seeing all the criticism and a quarterback, God love him, who basically responds to haters on Twitter and Instagram. And with a whole kit and caboodle, the entire national audience gets to see the team struggle to a 17-16 win because the Ravens love struggling to 17-16 wins, especially in prime time. Or, you know, have Justin Tucker boot 60-yard field goals to help you win a game against Detroit twice, by the way. One of them wasn't a primetime game. One was a Monday night game when we were in college way back when, in the glory days of the University of Maryland. I am buying this for every reason that you laid out. For my own personal health, I hate them, because then you end up getting way too drunk on a Monday, stress drinking while your team's playing. The Tuesday is just a wash, or Sunday night to a Monday. I think the shorter week is tough, especially when you talk about the bye week, you know, refreshing a team like we mentioned before. This, you don't get that opportunity. And overall, I just think primetime games are the worst. I can't stand them. I can't stand having to wait for my team to play the rest of the day. I like being done by 4 and relaxing through the rest of the schedule. But you know, kidding aside, even for the team, I don't think they're great as well. I think they put a number of primetime games in one season, puts a weight of expectation that the team can say over and over and over again doesn't bother them, that they can say is we're just focused on the next game. We like the pressure. Pressure makes diamonds, or whatever the stupid phrase RG3 had. Was a long time ago, but it subconsciously, I think it plays on you if you're the team. Like the Broncos, I think have six or seven primetime games this year because everybody just expects that Russ is going to cook for a team that hasn't made the playoffs in like 7 years or 6 or 7 years, whatever it is. I saw that most teams have to play their way into primetime. They have not. I like that the Ravens only have 3 this year. If they're good, maybe they'll get some more. But yeah, for me, the weight of expectation, the shorter weeks, and then for my own personal well-being, yeah, I'm buying the fact that primetime games are terrible.
Yeah, I'm torn on this one. I'm like right in the middle, because I've had such fun with primetime games that the Ravens beat the Chiefs in primetime in an amazing finish. The Ravens had an even better finish in beating the Colts in primetime, but we also had to deal with the Las Vegas Raiders game. We had to deal with the Miami Dolphins game last season. That was in primetime. That was one of the worst 3.5 hours of my life. Yeah. They famously had other terrible primetime games. There's like a Jags loss in primetime that still haunts us from like 7 years ago. So I'm sort of torn on... Then there was the Ravens-Browns primetime game, which was one of like the most awesome Ravens games of the last 5 years. The Lamar comes out of the bathroom slash training room with the two-minute warning, and Lamar's back out onto the field. That was like one of the cooler Ravens games of the Lamar Jackson era. So I really do go back and forth. I will side with Tim on this because of the travel thing, because it is annoying for a team to play on a Sunday and then have to play another game, you know, 4 days later, basically on a Thursday, and that is absolutely not their best product, and the games tend to stink on Thursdays. So I'll side with Tim, but I'm not nearly as far. I'm a slight buy on I actually want teams to have as few primetime games as possible.
I'm putting my future mortgage up and buying this take.
And that's it, Tim. Any other ones that come to mind? Any schedule things, blips that come up for buy or sell?
I'm buying the fact that it's stupid that we have to play an entire division to start the season.
I'll buy that. Yeah, I'll absolutely buy that. And I'm also buying that it's stupid that four of the last five games are against the AFC North.
Yep.
All right, that's pretty much it for us. I'm going to go over this random Raven one more time. Tim was all over it by clue one. So we'll see about the listener, how long it takes you guys to figure this out. So this random Raven played for the team for two seasons, 2014 and 2015, after being drafted in the third round, number 79 overall, out of Florida State. Big expectations for this player were not met when he struggled as a backup in his rookie season, which was cut short after 11 games when he tore his ACL. In his second year, his snaps went down dramatically from 245 to 67, and he only played in 12 games and recorded only 9 tackles. That's not good. By the start of his third season, he was in a competition to stay on the roster after the team signed Eric Weddle and planned to move Ladarius Webb from corner to safety, and this random Raven ended up getting released just before the start of the 2016 season. After what seemed like a complete bust of a pick, he was then signed by the Eagles the next day and played another 6 seasons in the NFL with the Eagles, Jets, Patriots, and Texans, and was re-signed by the Texans this offseason and will again be an NFL football player in 2022. This player has only 6 starts in an 8-year career, and I'm pretty sure 3 of those starts have come in the last, like, 2 seasons. And he will make $12 million as a career NFL player after the year 2022. Tim, who is this random Raven?
This is a man who was on my Mount Rushmore of guys I thought were going to be awesome. Write that down for the offseason, by the way, as we get into more of the doldrums, I should say. This is Terrence Brooks, the safety out of Florida State.
That is correct. It is Terrence Brooks. He played for the Texans. First of all, he's played every year since 2014.
Absolutely insane.
Was on the Texans last year. Started in 3 games, which was as many games as he had started in his previous 7 years combined, and was then re-signed by Houston, who is not a good football team. But good for Terrence Brooks, because his career could truly have been over after getting cut by the Ravens, and he has turned this into, like, dare I say, a lucrative career where he has stuck around. He's a keep-getting-them-checks guy, an NFL version of a keep-getting-them-checks guy, so good for Terrence Brooks, but that is absolutely the random Raven. Well done, Tim. In a two-man booth situation, the pressure was on. So, yeah, any final words, Tim? Feeling okay about the schedule? Feeling bad about the schedule?
I mean, I'm feeling terrible about the schedule now. This is the most pessimistic I've felt about this team since this season ended, which is not great.
Oh, no.
I know. I wasn't feeling that way to start, but now that we're here, I don't know. Let's put it this way. To end on a positive note, nowhere to go but up from here. How about that?
Tim, they were in all those games with like half a team and a backup quarterback.
I know. Well, I'll get there at some point.
We have the summer. We're going to work this summer on getting Tim's optimism and confidence up. For Tim Horsey and Antonio Barbera and a missing but missed Jace Evans, thank you guys very much for listening to us here on Pod Like a Raven. We will see you very likely, in 2 weeks.